The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning to you. 6 minutes past nine, Thursday, the 28th of September. You're very welcome along to another edition of the 9 till noon show, which Thursday show. And we've the usual mix coming up for you, keeping you across all the big stories of the day, items of interest to your community and yourself. And we want you involved in that conversation. As you know, if you want to give us a call and let us know what you think, 07491 25000. If you're in Derry and Strabane or elsewhere outside the Republic, 00353 7491 25000. We really want your WhatsApps and your texts to 086 60 25000. Again, from outside the Republic, 00353 86 60 25000. And just to let you know, of course, you can send WhatsApp voice notes to us if you prefer. Just hold down the little speaker and chat away and send it in to us. And you can also email comments at highlandradio.com. It's another busy Thursday morning for newspapers, as you know, well aware at this stage. So let's see what's making the headlines. The Tyrconnell Tribune. Ever since the 1850s, the church ledgers in Fannet have been recording and preserved by the parish priest, but no more because that roll was closed out on Sunday morning's grim and unrelenting landscape. Sunday saw the centuries-old legacy being severed in Fannet, with the post of parish priest now confined to history. Nobody left to pass on the torch from countless generations past. Those were the generations that defied the redcoats in penal times, when big congregations flocked to the mass rocks often in the midnight hours, they battled the forces of imperial oppression. The hand of history from that legacy was silently closed on Sunday on a permanent basis for a community that reaches out to more than 2,000 people. An extensive and beautifully written story on a very important issue from John McAteer on the front and inside of the Tyrconnell Tribune there. And John referencing history. And just to let you know, that we will be talking history. We haven't done it for a while. We should be doing it more regularly. But anyway, we're going to be talking history with Professor Joe a little, or Dr. Joe a little later on in the programme. So stay tuned for that. I know lots of you love it. The Donegal Democrat, Ronan Wilson, the 9-year-old boy killed in a hit-and-run collision in Bundoran on Sunday night, will be laid to rest today. The funeral of the young schoolboy will take place at St Mary's Church, Donegal, County Tyrone at 12 noon. As floral tributes and teddy bears poignantly mark the spot in Bundoran where the Budingate footballer was tragically killed, a fundraiser has been set up to support his heartbroken family. And it's just unimaginable that things can change for people. And we know it because we've experienced it, lots of it, but not like this. I think if you lose a child or you're predeceased by your children, obviously it takes on a... We're just not humanly conditioned to deal with it. And it's very, very tough. And we know that all too well, unfortunately. But just to go from having fun in Bundoran, a wonderful day out, and then a couple of days later, you're standing in a church at a funeral of the thing that's most important to you. It's just beggar's belief. So all we can do is, if it's possible, to send love and strength to that family and the young boy's friends on what is just literally unimaginable. And we really, if you pray for them, because they need all the prayers that are going. The Derry People, Donegal News this morning. As the community of Creeslough prepares to mark the first anniversary of the devastating tragedy in the town, plans are underway to hold a private memorial service at the site of the former filling station, shop and apartment complex. Saturday, October 7th, will mark the first anniversary of the Creeslough explosion, which claimed the lives of 10 people, including two young children. Creeslough curate Father John Joe Duffy confirmed to the Donegal News this week that the private service will take place at 3 p.m. on Saturday, October 7th. And we on this show are going to also respect that privacy on the day, of course, and in the days leading up to it. We will be having a conversation about that awful tragedy, so recent as well, that changed so many lives and cost so many lives, but changed so many lives forever. But as the anniversary approaches, we are going to be giving the local community the space and the respect that they deserve on this programme. The Derry News this morning, relatives of a Derry teenager shot and killed by a British soldier over 50 years ago have urged the Public Prosecution Service to think hard about what it was doing to victims' families. The soldier accused of shooting Daniel Hegarty passed away last week, leaving the Hegarty family in legal limbo. Daniel was 15 at the time. He was shot twice in the head at an army patrol in the Creggan area during Operation Motorman. Following the revelation of the death of Soldier B, the family said they've now been denied justice. Speaking to the Derry News on Wednesday, Daniel's sister Margaret said, "They, the PPS, are part of this and they denied us justice, and they can word it whatever way they want in the media. They can wrap it up in a bow, but they know that they've done it from the day Daniel was murdered." On to the Irish Independent now. These are the Nationals, of course, and speculation as to what will be contained or not contained in the budget for 2024, which will be announced next year, continues. Businesses affected by the refugee crisis, and I picked this one out because there's quite a number of areas of Donegal that this will be relevant to, potentially. Businesses affected by the refugee crisis sparked by the Russian invasion of Ukraine may be in line for a package of supports under budget 2024 negotiations. Fine Gael backbenchers are pushing for assistance for businesses in areas where hotel accommodation is now being used to house refugees or asylum seekers. A spokesperson for Enterprise Minister Simon Coveney described the proposal as an excellent suggestion and said he was listening to his party colleagues. There are significant energy-related supports for all businesses under the Temporary Business Energy Support Scheme, but discussions on Budget 24 are advancing, and Minister Coveney is listening to his Fine Gael colleagues and their excellent suggestions for further business supports. How that would work and how extensive they might be and how you would demonstrate a loss in business sounds to me like a scheme might be announced, but it might be hard to access. I spoke to a couple of business owners who found the electricity or the energy scheme too much hassle than it was worth. Now, I'm really open to correction, and maybe it's been refined since, but if they are going to introduce something or measures, it has to be easily acceptable or accessible. Sorry, is the word I was looking for there. On to the Irish Times now, and they've given a front page dominance to another political poll. This is polling a number of people to determine what parties are rocking their world and those that aren't. It's got a accuracy of plus or minus 2.8%, and it shows that Sinn Féin has extended its lead over its rivals and remains on course to be comfortably the largest party in the next Dáil, according to the latest Irish Times Ipsos opinion poll. And it is quite interesting, and don't jump on me for saying this, okay, but it is quite interesting that, yep, relatively quiet on certain issues, I would suggest, you know, not hearing lots of stuff about lots of different things. Obviously, you know, we know Piers Doherty is very vocal in the Dáil and what have you. But I mean, there's no massive things there, no massive issues that I can put a finger on at the moment. And so, in other words, in opposition, you can sit relatively quietly and your popularity can grow. So Sinn Féin on 34%, that's plus 3. Fianna Fáil on 20%, minus 1. Fine Gael 18%, unchanged. The Green Party at 3%. They're down 1, Labour Party down 1, Social Democrats down 3, and Independent Others up 3. So that includes AIM2, by the way. I don't know why they're grouping AIM2 and People Before Profit in with Independence, but anyway, that's what they're doing. That being said, Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil add up their totals, 41%. So the government, not that that's necessarily how it works, but the government's still 7 points clear of Sinn Féin. Well, with 18 months at most to go before the next general election, Sinn Féin now leads Fianna Fáil by 14 points, Fine Gael by 16, after today's poll shows the party recovering from a fall-off in support seen during the first half of the year. Now, again, it's fantastic that she's back in the spotlight and fully recovered. This covers a period where Mary Luke McDonald was actually convalescing from a major operation. So it just goes to show what influences these. I'm not saying that influenced it, but how the whole system works. Okay, the Irish Daily Mail this morning. A revolt by Garda Commissioner, a revolt by Gardaí against Garda Commissioner Drew Harris is set to escalate, with members threatening to strike over his plans to revert to the old working roster. Gardaí say they will withdraw overtime on October 10th, the day of the budget, which is really quite interesting because you can imagine that will be the next day we're likely to see quite a big protest outside the Dáil. There was one as the Dáil returned from summer recess. I would say it's not a coincidence with the conversation that's happening out there that they've chosen budget day, when there probably will be a sizable demonstration, to withdraw overtime. And also they're going to withdraw overtime on Halloween before up to 11,000 members of the force go on an all-out strike on November 10th. In a major development last night, just a fortnight after a vote of no confidence in the commissioner, members of An Garda Síochána said they'll ignore the order to return to their old rotas in November and continue in their current timetables, even if this results in severe disciplinary action. And they have not ruled out a Drew flu. We're familiar with blue flu, but obviously now it's the Drew flu. And that, again, makes it even more personal between rank and file and the Garda commissioner. The Irish Farmers Journal: a massive €400 per head beef price gap has opened up between Ireland and Britain. This equates to an 8,000 difference for a farmer killing 20 bullocks at an average carcass weight of 380 kilograms. Based on the weekly prime cattle kill, the price gap means Irish farmers are missing out on €5 million per week. The €400 head gap has widened from €72 head in March 2023. The latest Board Beef figures show that the UK buyers have moved to take full advantage of the lagging Irish beef price. On to the Daily Star today. Colombia's biggest and most dangerous drugs cartel was behind the 2.2-ton haul of cocaine valued at 157 that was seized off the west coast by the Army Ranger Wing, investigators believe. Sources have told the Star that Gardaí suspect the notorious Clan de Golfo owned the seized cocaine, which would have been worth as much as €500 million on the streets, because they cut it, don't they? And the papers also established that the Kinahan cartel are now being investigated as possible clients in Ireland for a portion of the massive shipment, most of which was destined for Britain and Europe. But some crime correspondents playing that down, with the Kinahans based in Dubai now and much of their army over here in prison. And then there's some confusion as to how this shipment is being described. It's the largest ever in terms of weight, but it's not the largest ever in terms of value. There was one a number of years ago that was lighter in weight, but because the price of cocaine has come down, which is ridiculous, isn't it? But because the price of cocaine has come down, it's not the largest financial seizure, but in terms of weight, it certainly is. A bar worker stole €1,330 from a nightclub and stuffed the cash into her underwear. This is the Irish Daily Mirror. Emmanuel Obgifo lifted the cash from Pulse nightclub and tried to hide it in her bra, but the 19-year-old student was caught by eagle-eyed security staff on CCTV cameras. Obgifo appeared at Letterkenny District Court charged with stealing. The third-level psychology student was working in the night spot on December 17th last year when she carried out the theft. The court heard Gardaí received a call from the venue's owner to say an employee had been stealing from the till. CCTV footage showed the lady taking money from the till and placing it into her jacket, and it was played to officers. Judge Cunningham handed her a €200 fine and allowed her 6 months to pay the money back in full. Okay. Not the kind of lift you'd be looking for, of course. Independent Councillor Nicholas Crossan joins us on the programme now. Good morning, Nicholas. Thank you
Good morning, Greg.
Chatting to us. Okay. Right. Thanks. You've made an observation, haven't you, when visiting the local hospital, which you believe, do you, that it might be contributing to problems?
Yeah, I just had a routine check myself last Wednesday, I think it was, at an outpatient clinic in Letterkenny Hospital for 11 o'clock in the morning. So I left, parked the car, and went in at about 10 to 11, trying to be in good time and all I got, because I was expecting a queue. And I was the only patient in that particular outpatient. So the guy says, okay, take a seat there. I just said, God, is it normally this quiet? He says, no, we had nobody in before you this morning. So he said, as they call them, no shows. And I said, oh my God, you know. So this was at 11. And it was very frustrating for the workers there. And it was ironic that this week I got two representations from people looking to get on lists that couldn't even get on the list. And I was saying, my God, if you have all the no-shows and people waiting to get on, you know, could there not be, a meeting of the minds here? Mm-hmm. If you can't, and I'm not saying that people don't turn up just for the sake of don't turn up. There's 1,001 reasons why somebody can't make an appointment at Letterkenny or the HSE. But an awful lot of these people are not telling. You know, something may come up the day before and you can't make an appointment. Phone up and cancel your appointment. There are people ready to go within a few hours that can make Letterkenny Hospital make appointments.
But there's a couple of things going on here, though, Nicholas, isn't there? I mean, obviously, look, there's going to be people that don't show up, but a problem we don't really know the extent of is the organisation of the booking system. For an example, I speak to people often on the show and off air who rang up to cancel an appointment, but the appointment wasn't cancelled, or who say they got a letter to say they didn't turn up for an appointment when they never got a letter telling them there was an appointment. Mm-hmm. We still, for some reason, as far as I'm aware, don't have a text system where someone's texted the day before and says, will you be able to attend your appointment tomorrow, and you text back Y or N. I get what you're saying, and it's inevitable that some people go, actually, you know what, I don't feel too bad, I'm not going.
Yeah.
But the whole system needs to be audited so that we can find out how much of it is people simply not turning up, how much of it is people not getting letters, and how much is it us not having a system whereby we can sort of validate whether or not someone's going to turn up, a simple text message.
I can empathise with all the points that you've made, Greg, because I got my, I think my letter came about 2 or 3 weeks in advance. Mm. And sometimes I went back a couple of times just to make sure, to check the day and to check the time, because you think, oh God, I'll remember that. But then you go back. And I know people can forget, and people mightn't get the appointments. But what I'm basically talking about is, if you got an appointment to go to Letterkenny Hospital next Tuesday, and you can't, you know, on Monday you can't make it, just asking those people to phone in and say, look, mm-hmm. I cannot make my appointment next week. Can you make it available? Because I asked them what happens. So if there's a no-show, that person is rescheduled. So that means that is an extra person on the waiting list rather than being seen. And that is adding to a waiting list. Now, the primary care in Buncrana is not running at 100% mm-hmm. yet. But when that is up and running, and I'm trying to find out what capacity we're at, when that's up running at 100%, that should, if some person's out playing a bit of football or sprains their ankle or suspected broken toe, they can go in there and get an x-ray that will take the pressure off Letterkenny Hospital as well. That's why primary care working at its best, and that's why it's set up. So all these factors together, mm-hmm. I know that, look, there's people just, and it was ironic, as I said, that there's two people contacted me since last Wednesday asking could they see any, try to find out about an appointment. I heard you on yesterday with the HSE, and I'm no way on to defend the HSE or Letterkenny Hospital or anything like that, but I'm just only saying, with cooperation across the board, that we might help to reduce the housing lists.
Yeah, listen, I mean, it's a decent shout, isn't it? The more we can do, the better. And I think if the HSE, in terms of their organisation, met us halfway, we could get some way to alleviating a lot of these gaps, you know, these appointments that we want people in there, don't we, Nicholas? Because as you say, there's lots of people that would turn up at the drop of a hat if they were able to.
There are people waiting for serious appointments. Mine wasn't a serious appointment. There was a routine checkup I was going up for. But what I'm saying is, somebody has waited a month or 6 weeks or whatever the case may be on an appointment. That is a long, long time sitting in the house wondering and wondering and wondering what's going to happen. So what I'm saying is, if somebody that say, oh God, I can't make that appointment next week, phone them and tell them. There's a phone area. No, if you can't make the appointment, please phone us. I could see actual frustration with the workers on there last week. And I'd have to say, when I went in, the service or the treatment is second to none, I would have to say, the particular patients I was on. Unbelievable treatment we got. I was sitting, there's a guy come on after me, so he says it was from Letterkenny. He says very quiet, and I was telling him the story, just, you know. So I would love to see these places running at capacity. We have the equipment there, the staff is there to work around the clock, for that matter, to get the we're not going to work around the clock to get what we have. In my opinion, we should be doing actually more hours, maybe two shifts, to get the waiting list down, because it is critical that people waiting at home have to be seen by a doctor or a consultant to tell them where they're at, because there's nothing worse than sitting at home worrying of what might or might not be happening. So the quicker we get people into outpatients or into Letterkenny County Hospital to be seen by consultants, the better for everybody.
Yeah. And you know, you talk about us being a little bit forgetful about appointments and all that type of stuff. We never really forget to say, turn up for a flight, you know.
No.
Do you know what I mean?
No, they're handing off. Maybe it's because of we pay for that.
Yeah, well.
Look, I'm not saying that. Look, there's bad transport for many links throughout the whole of Donegal to Letterkenny. When you get to Letterkenny, you may have to get a taxi. Not everybody has a car. I can appreciate that. There's 1,001 reasons why you can't make an appointment. All I'm saying is anybody that has just, for some reason, that they can't make the appointment, they know a day and a tune in advance, is contact the Pacific department that they're going to and tell them. And then it goes back to the hospital staff to get another person and a reappointment. And I think that would help. It would help the people at home as well, Greg.
Okay, well, listen, thanks very much for your comments. A number of people agreeing with you. Dolores on Facebook: I got my appointment on the 19th of September for November. I never miss any of my appointments. Yeah. Your speaker is right. I, too, have noticed this. I recently went to see a cardiologist and it was 12 noon and he said I was the second person he saw that day as others didn't show up. He asked when I got my notification and was wondering if the post was the issue. Another, the issue is people are asked if they want kept on a waiting list and they say yes and it's 2 or 3 years later by the time they get an appointment, by which time they forgot what it was for. I'm not sure that's in the area you were going. I'm not sure that's a factor there. Now, I could be wrong.
No, I just, anybody that cannot, if you can't make an appointment a day or two or a week in advance, you know you can't make it. Something can crop up. There's a million ones. Just please, please tell the relevant department in the hospital that you can't make the department or you can't make that appointment. Could they reschedule you and use your appointment for somebody else to be treated? That's all I'm asking, Greg.
All right, listen, thank you very much for your time. I do appreciate it. Councillor Nicholas Crossan there. You're very welcome back. Can you please ask your listeners, I walk every day Donegal Town in the forest. People tell me to stop it now in the middle of November as it's rutting season and deers cross and could attack you. Is this true? Is it safe to walk in forests where deers are present at this time of year? Asks a caller. Typical government mouthpiece. Is an independent, not a government member. But blaming the public again for the inadequacies under investment and decades of neglect in the health service. We have the same government on different forms and yet it's the public's fault. Another amazing, you didn't report on the news about a standoff in Ballina where a foreign man held someone as hostage, but sure, that's racist talking about that. It's not, it's just in Ballina. Tune into Midwest Radio. I'm sure they'll have plenty on that. But also there is, and you may have got your information from Twitter, the man may have a foreign name, but I don't know if he's a foreigner. He could have lived here for 30 years. That's what the judicial process is all about. He's in police custody. It'll be investigated. It is not Twitter or X, as it's called here. We cannot start talking about active investigations. It's literally against the law to get into the specifics of it. Conal Shovlin joins us on the programme now. Good morning, Conal. Thanks for your time. We're talking about proposals for social housing next to the Dolman Centre in Kilcloony, Port New. What's your take on this? What's your involvement in this, Conal?
Well, Yarn Port New Respect Community Co-op was established in 1995 to improve the social and economic needs of the area, and we were successful in doing the Dolman Centre there, and it's a very successful community centre. And when we looked at other things, and housing seems to be a big issue because it's a big holiday home area and young people find it very hard to get on the housing ladder. And we looked at the structure of the population and we found that in 1993 there was 142 at the school and now there's just over 60. So younger people obviously would find it impossible to build a house. Houses costing maybe 300,000 and, you know, interest rates are higher. And so the structure of the state is that they can borrow money maybe at 1-1.5%. And as Seamus Coffey said over to McGill, the summer school, he's a sort of distinguished economist there from Cork University, but he's on the media a lot. He says it's an absolute great investment for the government to build houses because they're going up in value, and all the labour and the materials and the money is kept in the local economy. And we just need young people. But we're looking at housing, we're trying to get it right, and we're looking for all aspects because we only get one chance at this, and this project will be here long after I'm gone. You know, it'll last 60 or 70 years, a number of generations, but to get it right for all age groups. And the area has an awful lot to offer, like in, even in Kilcloony itself, which wasn't designated as an area for housing previously, more bigger towns, it's just a small area. But it has, you know, the Dolman Centre there is a very good community centre, and the child play area, and you have the church, and you have a pub, and you have Nairn Beach 5 minutes away, and you have all the facilities there. Now they've done great work in there with motorised chairs and all that, so people can go out on the beach if they are unable to walk the beach, they can, and it's there. And You have an awful lot going for it, and we think, you know, that housing now is a big part of it, and we're working with the council, and we're just taking one step at a time and trying to get it right, and, you know, to get them to we have a site located, and so we're working very well actually with them, yeah, to try to get it done, you know,
and this
we think
is,
the money is there to do it.
In terms of housing provision, this is sort of back to the future or back to the past. This was very successfully employed right across the county in the past, and often when we talk about, you know, what's happening in certain areas, it can feel a little bit anecdotal. But as you said, in 1993, 140 children in the local national school. Now there is just 62. Now maybe the reproduction rate has dropped a little between then and now. I don't know, but it is a very strong indicator as to the future.
Yeah, and somebody, I mean, you know how quick time goes, and you mentioned it there earlier on.
Yeah.
I mean, somebody in 14 now, in 10 years, they're 24 and they might have a family. And these, you know, people can work from home now, but we need young people in the area. But we also are looking at, you know, it's a great area for people maybe that would have special needs, you know, and an all-integrated housing structure for elderly. Just getting it right and having something there for everybody, having a nice sort of a friendly village concept, and that there's something to do all the time, that there's an occupation, that you can go to Nairn Beach 5 minutes away, you can go into the Dolman Centre. And I think the great thing about a place like the Dolman Centre, you don't have to go in there looking for any, or you don't have to go in for an air, and you can just go in there, you know.
Yeah.
And that type of friendliness is important.
It's a year-round population, because that is the heart and soul of any community. So when we talk of proposals, are they advanced in any way, or are we at the start of this, Conal? And pardon my ignorance on this, but obviously a lot of conversation has happened. So how advanced are these proposals?
These things take time. The biggest mistake any of us can be in is in a massive rush to get things done next week. We started this about a year ago, negotiating with the council, and we have a very good relationship. And then we had to see the number of people maybe that will be interested in housing in the area, and what would be their needs in the housing of these people. And then we had to look at a site, and because we want to be near the Dolman Centre, we want to be close to that people can walk there, you know, that there's that village thing, and that we often hear of places that, I mean, in Dublin, I've been to Dublin and to community meetings, and they said they built all the houses and they had no community facilities, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But so we have that first, and it's so the council, and we have the site located. So now we're working with the council now, just in trying to bring it to the next stage. And we talk to the planning people to get everything, you know, to bring everybody. It's cooperation all the way and working together. But it'll take a bit of time. But the main thing is that we get it right.
To this,
you know,
as well too. Like, I would say there are older people in the area, empty nesters, or people struggling to heat a 3 or 4 bedroomed house that might actually prefer to live in this type of accommodation. I'm not saying they're all small houses, don't get me wrong, but, you know,
yeah,
where there is a bit of a hub, which would then theoretically free up larger houses for younger families. You know, is that the type of way we need to be thinking about this as well?
Yeah, you know, that's going to happen anyway, and elderly people I'm really reaching that stage myself, you know, since I went on Highland Radio over 30 years ago, time eats you up, you know. But it's important to have older people and people with special needs, and have younger people, to have all the people sort of And then in some way or other, they all work together and they are all supportive of each other without necessarily putting structures in place. You know, the way back that had the Mehel concept of people coming to build the haystack in October, all the neighbours gathered to help. The people sort of, without having regulations in place, they just tend to, you know, to look after each other, you know. And if you have a place like that, one person kind of looks after the other, and you have young people and you have older people.
And you know
people,
what, maybe Connell, needs. You still see pockets of that, pockets of communities that still just have are just managing to retain that type of community, but by the skin of their teeth. And it's wonderful
And it is, for the future, it's probably the only way, you know. Because a lot of the rest of the things, you know, they haven't worked out that well, even though they're regarded as hugely progressive. Mm. Because we are a community of people, and we kind of need each other, you know, one way or the other. Like, it's community, and one is supporting the other, and people get a lot of enjoyment out of that, and they get happiness out of it, of that, rather than just, you know, base the whole thing on a monetary value. But it's just that these young people cannot get a house, and it's a great investment for the state.
Yeah, and there's no hope. Young people feel there's no hope, and that's why we have ways of gauging our success or securing our future. Home ownership, for right or wrong, is one of the ways we measure that here. And a lot of younger couples, feel that they can't do that here. Now, whether that's an absolute reality or a perception, I presume it's mostly a reality. But unless we start reversing things like that, we are going to continue to see a depopulation, particularly of rural areas. Dublin's population is booming because people are being driven towards services and what have you. But go ahead, Connell.
And as Seamus Coffey said, the McGill Summer School, this is hugely advantageous for the government because all the money stays in the country. It is different if money's invested abroad, the builders, the materials, and then you have an asset that's increasing in value for the state, and then you have a home for people, and then you have the social fabric improved greatly. And because young people can't pay 5% interest, and my generation gained on inflation when houses were built maybe for 20,000 and they're increased then to 200,000. But that's not going to happen in the future, so there's not a hope of young people. And we need these young people greatly, and if we haven't the young people to have these supports available to them at a localised community level, and I think it can be done in a lot of places throughout Donegal, throughout the country, you know.
Okay.
To look at it in that context, you know.
All right, well, it's a medium game, and hopefully it's successful because it.
As I say, we're very happy with our relationship with the council, and they've been very helpful to us and supporting us and getting it right, going all along. But we just must get it right, and there's no point in rushing it, because if you do something that doesn't work out as well as if you take your time and just think of everything, you know, and look at other projects throughout the country that's similar to ours and all that, you know, and think of all the different generations and the different needs of the different people, whether it's young, whether it's old, or people with special needs or everything. Just incorporate all aspects of the needs of society into it.
I am a big fan of community involvement in things. The more the community drive things, I think the more chance they have of success or actually even happening. Connell, thank you so much for your time. Connell Shoveling there, talking about proposals for housing, and it's not today or tomorrow, but social housing close to the Dolman Centre there in Kilcloonie, Port New. They're working closely with the council, have been for a year, but as Connell said, it's a medium to long-term game. A caller says she was due for treatment in Sligo for MS, but it was cancelled due to a COVID outbreak on the ward. She's wondering if this is something that is still happening in hospitals generally. I think there's been a particular issue in Sligo recently. I actually believe there's a mask mandate back at Sligo University Hospital because of COVID and, I suppose, other conditions on wards there. Good morning, Greg. The health service is $1 billion in overspend. Our government have $1 billion and probably more left from the last budget, but instead of plugging that gap, they want to spend $1 billion of our money, and they've left it over on housing refugees before health. They've got plenty of money. But up until now, we throw money at problems. I don't think significantly more money has been put into the health service. Have you seen the results of that? Do you feel that, and it's your money, by the way, because your tax is your tax. Do you feel that the money being spent has been spent in a way whereby you're getting a return for that? Like, there's a billion shortfall in the health service. Would you be confident that if that billion euro shortfall was plugged, that you would see a benefit to that? Honestly, now, I'm asking you that question honestly. I know the point you're making as it relates to housing, but it's not like there is not more money there. But do you really feel that if another billion was put into the health service, that it would improve the health service. Honest answers only to 0866 to 25,000. Does anyone know if accident and emergency department in Letterkenny is very busy this morning? It generally is very busy, but if anyone is down there, let us know what it's like. An interesting thought as we move towards electric vehicles. How is the world of rallying going to operate? I can't see any great speed or timings happening with one of these cars. Well, electric cars, the new Teslas will outperform a Bugatti. Electric cars have massive acceleration and speed. And already there is Formula E, I believe it's called, where it's like Formula One, but it's electric cars. I don't think that's going to be a problem in terms of motorsport, but purists won't like a change from internal combustion engines. Aquila says, I lived in County Kerry for a few years and was amazed at how positive and happy the people were down there compared to Donegal. They would often throw compliments at you saying, you look lovely, when sometimes you didn't feel so lovely. They would often follow you with, have a great day or enjoy the rest of your day or night. I found this really lovely, encouraging and polite, being complimentary, happy and positive. Reflecting on these words as the day went on just made my heart smile. It is Compliments Day tomorrow, okay? National Compliments Day. Right, okay. Barry Roach is Southern correspondent of the Irish Times. Good morning, Barry. Thanks so much for your time today.
Good morning, Greg. How are you doing?
I am doing good. This story is absolutely everywhere, but I suppose briefly, just give us an overview, sort of in a context to what's been happening in relation to this drug seizure over the last couple of days.
Well, I suppose the story sort of kicks off in terms of media awareness, certainly, I suppose, on Sunday night when a trawler called the Castlemore ran aground on a sandbank off Blackwater and County Wexford, a sandbank called the Money Weights, and they had to be rescued by the Irish Coast Guard helicopter rescue 117 from Waterford. They were winched off. There were two chaps on board, a 6-year-old Briton and a 30-year-old or 31-year-old Eastern European man. And when they landed, they were winched onto the Irish Navy ship, the LE William Butler Yeats, which had been shadowing them because there were suspicions that they were partaking in this drug smuggling operation, that they were going to rendezvous with a mothership, as it were. So they were arrested on Sunday night into Monday morning. And then it turned out this bulk carrier called the MV Matthew, which had sailed from South America on the 18th of August and was entering Irish waters over the weekend. She lost power going up the Irish Sea, lost power around Arklow, drifted back down past Wexford around the corner or into off Waterford. And the next thing we discovered was that she was being boarded by Army Rangers who fast roped down the...
Okay, unfortunately, that line has just completely gone. It's not going to return either. So I don't know. Can you take that line back out there, Caroline, and restore it? No, we can go back to Barry. Barry, sorry about that. I don't know what happened. Southern correspondent of the Irish Times. You were describing to us how the authorities became aware of this this vessel.
Yeah, I think we were off Ballycotton when the Army Rangers landed on board the ship. And what we've learned since is that not only did they take control of the ship, but they actually foiled an attempt by the crew to burn the cocaine. They had loaded some of the bales of cocaine, which was 2.2 tons of it there, which valued by the Gardaí at 1.157 million. But they had put some of that cocaine into a lifeboat and poured some accelerant, possibly diesel, over, tried to set it alight. But the Rangers were quick off the mark when they landed on the ship, took control of the bridge, but also got fire extinguishers and extinguished the blaze. So the cocaine was saved or preserved as evidence. The boat has come into Cork, into Marina Point down near Cove, and she was secured there with an armed support unit of Gardaí forming a perimeter around on Tuesday night into Wednesday morning. And then Gardaí from the Garda National Drugs Organised Crime Bureau began unloading her. And it took them about 8 hours to carry off around 90 bales of cocaine, of what's suspected cocaine, 25 kilo bales, as it were. That's gone to Dublin. Samples will be taken to Forensic Science Ireland to establish that, confirm it is cocaine, but also to establish its purity, which ultimately will give some sort of street value at the end of the day for the seizure.
Now, I beg your pardon, Barry, go ahead.
Well, there was some drama on Monday night off Waterford when the ship sent out an emergency call to have a crew member evacuated for a medical emergency. It turned out to be the captain. you know, it seems initially it was reported he had some sort of blackout and fell, but it seems he may have very well been the victim of a row or an assault. He was airlifted by Rescue 117, the helicopter from Waterford that had already rescued the two chaps off the trawler off Wexford. He was brought to Waterford University Hospital Monday night. His injuries weren't serious. He was discharged on Tuesday morning, but he was arrested by Gardaí. Apparently, he had a bag with him containing something like $50,000 or $60,000. He's in custody in Wexford with the other two men. And then last night we heard that Gardaí here in Cork, again, officers from the Garda National Drugs Organised Crime Bureau, I'm getting the hang of it eventually, they arrested three chaps on board, the three officers, the chief officer, first officer, and the second officer. Two of those guys are Ukrainian, one is Iranian. One has been taken to Fermoy in North Cork for questioning. The other two are taken to Cove. They're all being detained under Section 50 of the Criminal Justice Act, which, as I understand it, allows Gardaí to hold suspects up for up to 7 days. So they have time with all six suspects now, as it were. But the three guys who were arrested yesterday or last night, even though they have some English, Gardaí feel it would be better that they be assisted with interpreters so that there's no ambiguity about their responses when they're questioned about the drug seizure. So they're being questioned today with the aid of interpreters, Ukrainian and Iranian speakers. So that's where we're at the moment. The ship is still impounded. There's a major search carried out then, or being carried out by Gardaí and rummage teams from the Customs Office of Revenue and Customs, who are experienced in searching. It's a big ship. It's 189 metres, about twice the size of a rugby pitch. It has a carrying capacity of 64,000 tonnes, so they'll be searching the holds, but also there's a chance that perhaps something was concealed under the holds in these double-barreled buoyancy tanks, so they may very well have to use cutting equipment to go down there to see whether there's more cocaine or contraband stored there. So,
and Barry, as it stands, and there's a bit of confusion amongst the public, as it stands, this is the biggest haul of drugs in terms of weight, but obviously the price of cocaine must have dropped because we've had similar large hauls, but not quite as big, of greater value.
Yeah, it's a bit confusing in the sense that, I mean, we've had a lot of them down here in Cork. We've had Lucky Day was the ribbon in Dunlop Bay.
Right, yeah.
That was 440 million. Mackay Bella was 290. Dances with Waves was 500. But those valuations are based on the street value. The actual quantities, which is probably a more accurate way of ascertaining which is the largest, are somewhat smaller in those cases. So this is the largest by volume. And I presume when they actually do a test on purity, that they will be able to I'll tell you here now what the actual volumes of those previous ones were. Almost 600 Ks in CMIS back in 96. Jamaeus was 320 kgs. Posidonius, that's cannabis, so slightly different. 1.5 tons in Dunlop Bay of cocaine in July 2007. 1.9 tons of cocaine on Dances with Waves in November 2008, and then 1 ton of cocaine in September 2014 on Mackay Bella. So in terms of volume, this seizure is the biggest. It's 2.2 tons, so it's bigger than any of those, but it's just that the value that Gardaí put it on at the moment is 157 million, but when they do tests and determine the purity and the level of mixing agent you can put into it, that will probably mean it has a street value possibly in 500 million or so. So it will work out to be highest in that regard as well. But at the moment, probably the most accurate measure of comparing them is the actual tonnage, and this is the biggest tonnage wise.
Yeah, remarkable stuff. Barry, thank you so much for your time. Sorry about the interruption. Barry Roach there, Southern correspondent of the Irish Times. And of course, you know, whilst we do know that cocaine use is very high in Ireland, this was not destined for the Irish market. Certainly some of it may well have been, but would have been found its way to many, many countries across Europe and beyond, even perhaps. Who's to say? All right, okay. Thank you very much indeed for your company for the first hour. We're going to be back with you after we take a break for the news and obituary notices. Don't go anywhere.